right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, December 12th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here at UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is a chilly and damp 30 degrees with fog, snow, mist here in upstate New York. So where did we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Intro to Human Behavioral Biology from Stanford professor Robert Sapolsky. And we listened to a lecture. So it was the very first day of Biology 152 at Stanford University being taught by Professor Sapolsky in regards to behavioral biology and switches, genetic switches, hormonal switches that can be flipped that could have a direct influence on the behavior of the organism. And why this is important, we've been looking a lot at the brain. We have looked a lot at some of the switches that they can flip in the brain, whether it be with optogenetics or transcranial stimulation. We looked at ultrasound and potentially microwaves in Cuba as well, doing physical things to the brain, utilizing different frequencies in electromagnetic spectrum. We also read about, maybe we'll get back there, some of the stuff that DARPA was working on, utilizing artificial intelligence and brain implants to be able to manipulate chemicals and neuronal connections in the brain to change mood. Well, I want to continue a little bit on this line of mad science. That's kind of what the show's always about. But in regards to yesterday and listening to that human behavioral biology, Dr. Sapolsky had mentioned at the very beginning about a guy who went a little crazy. He embezzled some money and had an affair, and he thought, well, maybe he's having a midlife crisis, or maybe he had a genetic mutation of some kind that just set things awry. And that got me to thinking. I saw a few news stories yesterday about our favorite love to hate DARPA and gene drive technology, talking about genes and flipping switches. I thought I should share with you. This is a good update from what we have looked at before with gene drives. Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, heavily investing. They started doing a lot of work over at Oxitec. It spun out of Oxford University with those Oxitec mosquitoes, if you remember, and being able to pass a trait throughout an entire population to be able to breed out undesirables that they didn't want. Well, Clapper, if you remember, came out last year or the year before and said that gene editing is now a WMD. And remember that adagene that was somehow tied to MIT sent out 60,000 copies of CRISPR all over the world to anyone who wanted one to democratize the technology. We read about that DIY company a while back. That guy had formerly worked for NASA on terraforming Mars, no less. And he was selling these DIY kits, now the FDA is not too happy about, for doing your own gene editing in mommy's back bedroom. Let's take it a step further, because it's gone way beyond DIY in mommy's back bedroom. U.S. military agency invests $100 million in genetic extinction technologies. Why would they do that? Technology could be used to wipe out malaria-carrying mosquitoes, good old Billy Gates' project, or other pests, but the UN experts say fears over possible military uses and unintended consequences strengthen case for a ban. U.S. military agency is investing in $100 million in genetic extinction technologies that could wipe out malarial mosquitoes, invasive rodents, and that is a project they are working on in New Zealand. And other species say emails released under a FOIA Act. The documents show that the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA, has become the world's largest funder of gene drive research and will raise tensions ahead of a UN expert committee meeting in Montreal beginning on Tuesday, and that was the first week of December. December 5th, 2017. It was a week ago. The UN Convention on Biological Diversity is debating whether to impose a moratorium on the gene research next year, and several southern countries fear a possible military application, where they're letting all these mosquitoes with gene drives in them go in the wild. U.S. diplomats confirmed that the new email release would worsen the quote-unquote bad name of gene drives in some circles. Oh, no. Raise the concern and alarm. And many countries will have concerns when this technology comes from DARPA, a U.S. military science agency. The use of genetic extinction technologies in bioweapons is the stuff of nightmares, including Jules. But known research is focused entirely on pest control and eradication, eventually to be you. We're overpopulated now. So cutting-edge gene editing tools such as CRISPR-Cas9 work by using a synthetic RNA to cut into DNA strands and then insert, alter, or remove targeted traits. These might, for example, distort the sex ratio of mosquitoes or humans to effectively wipe out malarial populations. Do you guys remember there was a study that came out of Japan, and I could look it up really quick, but they had done an experiment. Well, I got to spell and talk, that's hard. Hold on one second. Mosquitoes, vaccinators. There was a study that came out of Japan about using mosquitoes as flying vaccinators. And I remember when I ran across that, I was horrified because that was real research that they were doing. So when I first started seeing all these GMO mosquitoes being released, I was a little alarmed. Anyway, so back, we'll get to the flying vaccinators. Let's get back to this. I don't know where I put the story. Oh, here it is. Let's get back to DARPA investing $100 million into gene drives. So it uses CRISPR-Cas9, blah, blah, blah. Some UN experts, though, worry about unintended consequences. One told The Guardian, you might be able to remove viruses or the entire mosquito population, but that may also have downstream ecological effects. Yes, we live in this big ecosystem and species that depend on them. And I'm going to add, like bats, and also I think dragonflies. My main worry, he added, is that we do something irreversible to the environment despite our good intentions before we fully appreciate the way that this technology will work. Well, ding, ding, at least somebody at the UN has a head on straight and isn't totally bought off, it seems. Jim Thomas, a co-director of the ETC group, which obtained the emails, said that the U.S. military influence they revealed would strengthen the case for a ban. The dual-use nature of altering and eradicating entire populations, remember it's always a double-edged sword, is as much of a threat to peace and food security as it is to a threat to ecosystems. He says militarization of gene drive funding may even contravene the NMOD Convention against Hostile Uses of Environmental Modification Technologies. Todd Kukin, who has worked with the GBIRD program, which I don't know what that is, doesn't say, which received $6.4 million from DARPA, said that the U.S. military's centrality to gene tech funding meant that researchers who depend on grants for their research may reorient their projects to fit the narrow aims of these military agencies. Big, big ding-a-ling on that one. So eradication of population technologies is now something that DARPA seems to have their big thumb all the way on. Between 2008 and 2014, the U.S. government spent about $820 million on synthetic biology. We read about some of those projects last week. And since 2012, most of this has come from DARPA or other military agencies. In an email reporting a U.S. militarily organized conference in June, a U.S. government biologist noted that DARPA's biotechnology program manager, Renee Woodsonhead, said that the Safe Gene Projects, and we read about that one, that was to give us digital rights management so if something accidentally or on purpose gets out, whoops, they could set us back to where we started, like a reset button. But the Safe Genes Project account was $65 million, but then mentioned with all other support in the room that it was $100 million total. A DARPA spokesman said that the figure was a liberal notional estimate that included researchers at the meeting funded by DARPA under related efforts. DARPA is not and should not be the only funder of gene editing research, but it is critical for the Department of Defense to defend its personnel and preserve military readiness, he says. DARPA believes that a steep fall in the cost of gene editing toolkits has created a greater opportunity for hostile or rogue actors. When we talk about rogue actors, they live under every bed and in every closet in mommy's back bedroom to experiment with this technology. This convergence of low cost and high availability means that applications for gene editing, both positive and negative, could arise from people or states outside of the traditional scientific community and international norms. It is incumbent on DARPA to perform this research and develop technologies that can protect against accidental and intentional misuse. Yeah, like I said, accidentally or on purpose. Gene drive research has been pioneered by the Imperial College London, and that's where Oxitec is out of. Professor Andrea Crisanti, who confirmed has been hired by DARPA, wouldn't you know it, on a $2.5 million contract to identify and disable such drives. Fears that the research could be channeled toward bioweapons were all fantasy, he said. There's no way this technology could be used for any military purpose, wink. But the general interest is in developing systems that contain the undesired effect of gene drives. We've never been asked to consider any application not for the good of eliminating our future plagues. Ding! Interest in the technology among U.S. Army bureaus has shot up since a secret report by the elite Jason group of scientists. Remember that Annie Jacobson had talked about the Jason scientists in that DARPA of the Pentagon's brain. And that's that military group that's made up of a lot of military contractors that advise the White House on what technologies they should pursue in the future of the military. Yeah, no backdooring going on there. But there was a report by an elite Jason group of military scientists last year, quote, received considerable attention among various agencies of the U.S. government. A second Jason report was commissioned in 2017 assessing, quote, potential threats this technology might pose in the hands of an adversary, technical obstacles that must be overcome to develop gene drive technology and employ it in the wild. Well, there you have it. This paper would not be publicly disclosed, but widely circulated within the U.S. intelligence and broader national security community, the email said. So I guess a FOIA got it all out. So now let's check this out. Researchers, and this is 2010, so this happened quite a while ago. Researchers turned mosquitoes into flying vaccinators. Well, who would have thunk it? Here's a study to file under, quote, unworkable but very cool, and that's what they say. A group of Japanese researchers has developed a mosquito that spreads vaccine instead of disease. Even the researchers admit, however, the regulatory and ethical problems, yeah, we're so worried about ethics, we're developing this in the lab, will prevent the critters from ever taking wing, at least for the delivery of human vaccines. Wink. Except maybe in Africa. Scientists have dreamed up various ways to tinker with the insect's DNA to fight disease. One option is to create strains of mosquitoes that are resistant to infections with parasites or other viruses. We read about some of that Wolbachia bacteria that they were using, and that is kind of a parasite that infects insects, and I don't remember what that virus was. Some sort of, I don't remember the term. Clint and Patrick Jordan talk about it all the time, but it's the virus. It's a virus that infects bacteria, so they can infect this virus into the bacteria and then use the bacteria to infect the bugs. That was that the bug project that DARPA was working on. Anyway, so to infect resistant to infections with parasites or viruses that are unable to pass the pathogens onto humans, these would somehow have to replace the natural disease-bearing mosquitoes, which of course is where the eugenics come in, which is a tall order. Another strategy closer to becoming reality is to release these transgenic mosquitoes that, when they mate with their wild counterparts, don't produce viable offspring. That would shrink the population over time. Oh, goody. So the new study relies on very different mechanisms. Use mosquitoes to become what the scientists call flying vaccinators. So normally when the mosquitoes bite, They inject a tiny drop of saliva that prevents the host's blood from clotting. The Japanese group decided to add an antigen, a compound that triggers an immune response, to the mix of protein in that insect's saliva. Oh, this is horrifying. A group led by molecular geneticist Shito Yoshida of Jinzi Medical University in Tochigi, Japan, identified a region in the genome of the Anopheles syphilis, a malaria mosquito, called a promoter that turns on genes only in the insect's saliva. To this promoter, they attached an SP15, which is a candidate vaccine against leishmaniasis. And I think we looked at that before. Wasn't that elephant man disease, which is a parasitic disease spread by sandflies that can cause skin sores and organ damage? Sure enough, the mosquitoes produced SP15 in their saliva, and the team reports in the current issue of the Insect Molecular Biology, March of 2010. And when these insects were allowed to feast on mice, the mice also developed the antibodies against SP15. Antibody levels weren't very high, and the team has yet to test whether they protect the rodents against the disease. In the experiment, the mice were bitten some 1,500 times. Oh, my God. Poor little mousies. And that may seem very high, but the studies show that in places where malaria is rampant, people often get bitten more than 100 times a night. And in the meantime, the group has also made the mosquitoes produce a candidate malaria vaccine. I wonder if there was Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation money involved in some of this research. And speaking of Bill and Melinda Gates, we're going to talk about them next. Other researchers are wowed by the achievement. The science is really beautiful, says Jesus Valenzuela of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease at Bethesda, Maryland. Yeah, that's not a government agency. Who developed the SP15 vaccine? Deva O. Brochetta, an insect molecular geneticist at the University of Maryland, College Park, calls it a fascinating proof of concept. Notice how all this stuff is in Maryland. This is just unbelievable. It is one big pit of crazy vipers. So why won't this fly? No pun intended. There is a huge variation in the number of mosquito bites one person receives compared with the next. So people exposed to transgenic mosquitoes would get a vastly different dose of the vaccine. And it would be like giving some people one measles jab and others 500. No regulatory agency would sign off on that. So wink, maybe we'll just do the studies on our own and not tell anybody, says molecular biologist. No, he didn't say that. I just did. Molecular biologist Robert Sinden of Imperial College London suggests, and recently the mosquitoes would also mean vaccinating people without their informed consent, which is an ethical no-no. At least if it gets out. Yoshida concedes that the mosquito would be unacceptable as a human vaccine delivery mechanism, except in the event of maybe a pandemic, I would think. And however, flying vaccinators or flying syringes, as some have dubbed them, may have potential in fighting animal disease. Animals don't need to give their consent, which is a shame. And the variable dosage would be less of a concern because we really don't care about them. So now, where on earth did that story? Oh, here it is. Let's talk about the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. A little bit of DARPA again. This is from Friends of the Earth, FOE.com. The military, and that would be DARPA, revealed as a top funder of gene drives. But not only that, it gets even deeper. The Gates Foundation paid $1.6 million to influence the UN, which was just meeting up in Canada last week on December 5th, on gene drives. So the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation was trying to get some slippery palms going there to get this passed. This is part of their whole malaria initiative. Over 1,200 emails released under an open records request revealed that the U.S. military is now the top funder and influencer behind a controversial genetic extinction technology known as gene drives, pumping $100 million into the field. The troves of emails opened via open records requests also shed light on a $1.6 million U.N. gene drive advocacy operation paid for by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Emerging Ag, and that would be AG as in agriculture, which is a private PR firm paid by the Gates Foundation, is working behind the scenes to stack key UN advisor processes with gene drive friendly scientists, and has recruited ostensibly independent academics and public officials into a private collaboration to counteract proposed regulations and to resist calls by scientists and conservationists for an international moratorium. Of course they are. I mean, this is so horrifying. This is Gates involved in manipulating the UN, and not that we wouldn't have expected something like this from him, but trying to manipulate the UN to railroad this technology that could potentially devastate our ecosystem. I mean, guys, mosquitoes are the bottom of the food chain, and just like all the phytoplankton that has been dying all over the ocean that then's causing issues with all the little mini organisms that eat it, and all the way up the food chain to some of the major drop-offs they are finding in the fish populations, guys, this could cause a collapse of the food chain. Not only that, maybe even flying vaccinators that are genetically modified somehow. Some of those recruited entered into the UN discussions without divulging their conflicts of interest, which I've seen in a lot of transcripts. That is something that they stand up in front of a group and they actually divulge those conflicts of interest, or the role that paid political consultants in shaping their inputs. The files dubbed the gene drive files, and there's actually a link out there, I'll have to find it, there's a link with all the files attached, additionally cast a spotlight on the central role of the shadowy U.S. Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA, as the key funder now accelerating gene drive development. So problem, reaction, solution. If that is not a good example, DARPA is now revealed as the major financial backer of efforts to develop gene drive mammals, and that would be mice that are led by a U.S. environmental NGO. And although DARPA has no biodiversity conservation mission, raising questions about the defense agency's intent. These revelations came on the heels of a public warning issued by a leading gene drive researcher, and that would be Dr. Kevin Esfeldt, that current gene drives are too powerful to be used in conservation, because you're just going to wipe them all out. It's an extinction machine, dummy. Gene drives are a powerful and dangerous new technology and potential biological weapon that could have disastrous impacts on peace, food security, and the environment, especially if they're misused. The fact that gene drive development is now being primarily funded and structured by the U.S. military raises alarming questions about this entire field. Good old Georgie Forgy Church is involved in all this. Gene drives could have profound global impacts. And these emails reveal a secretive attempt to game the system by gene drive proponents aiming to minimize essential regulations and oversight. We need more transparency about who is influencing critical decisions about the future of global ecosystems, people's livelihoods, and our food system. No shit. In response to this news that the integrity of technological processes under the Convention on Biological Diversity may have been compromised, civil society groups will urgently raise the need for better disclosure of interest within a framework for addressing conflict in the interest of the Convention of Biological Diversity. Mosquitoes containing gene drives are being proposed for malaria control. Where? Oh no, in Africa. Who is claiming potential health benefits in any application of such powerful technologies should be the subject to the highest standards of transparency and disclosure. Yeah, let's make sure we include an Ebola vaccine in those transgenic mosquitoes there, Johnny, before we let them go. Sadly, this doesn't appear to be the case, and risky GM organisms in the environment of these African countries is outrageous and deeply worrying, and I would tend to agree. Information revealed in the gene drive files includes the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Project Agency is reported to have given approximately $100 million. I already read that. Emerging AG is a privately held public relations firm and got over $1.6 million from Bill Melinda Gates to work on gene drive topics and focus on exerting influence on the U.N. National Convention on Biological Diversity. The attempt to covertly influence the UN process online centrally involved three members of the Associated UN Expert Committee, the ad hoc technical expert group on synthetic biology, and two of them are from institutions that together received over $100 million in U.S. military and other funds expressly to develop and test gene drive systems. One served as a stakeholder engagement lead for a gene drive development project, and the expert committee that meets this week in Montreal, Canada, the secretive Jason group of military advisors, has undertaken two classified studies on genome editing and gene drives at the request of the U.S. government. The gene drive study, which included input by who? Oh, a Monsanto executive. Go figure that one. Guys, this is so beyond insidious. Focuses on hostile use of gene drives and the use of gene drives in our agriculture. Now, remember, that was those insect allies. That was what the DARPA bug program was called. DARPA is revealed to be funding a high-profile UK team of researchers targeting African communities with gene-drive mosquitoes, and I bet they would be from the University of Oxford. And this funding was not previously made public. Whoops! The files also revealed for how far along two leading gene-drive teams have proceeded toward building gene-drive organisms and are preparing for open-field trials, including steps to select test sites in Australia, New Zealand, Burkina Faso, Uganda, Mali, Ghana, and to create government and community acceptances of the use of gene drives in key testing cities. And remember, they were pushing this down in the south. I think the Florida Keys was one location, and then in other locations where they had sprayed pesticides against Zika mosquitoes, and a whole bunch of animals or something died. I think maybe there were birds or bees they found dead. And they used that as a problem reaction solution to go, oh no, look at how dangerous pesticides are. Let's use the genetically modified mosquitoes instead, because that's an ecological wink solution. All right, so where do we go from here? So we've been talking about genetic modification and how CRISPR and gene drives have now, we find out they've, the majority of the funding has come from DARPA, which should give you more than momentary pause. Where is a story I found a couple days ago, and I've had this queued up. I thought this was a pretty good place to put it. Routing gene therapy. Since we've been talking a lot about the brain, and that lecture we heard yesterday, it talked about one single gene that maybe had gone awry in someone's brain who started to seem like they had a little bit of a mental problem going on. This is out of Eureka Alert, eurekaalert.org, December 6, 2017. Routing gene therapy directly into the brain. Oh, no. They're coming for your brain. I've said that so many times, and this is a proof of that concept. Researchers report that transplanting genetically engineered cells directly into the brain could help treat a variety of central nervous system diseases. If you guys remember from that optogenetic story that we had covered out of TechSpot, we had talked about utilizing opsins, and that would be those light-sensitive chemicals that they were finding in algae, and then using some sort of genetic modification to get those opsins into the neurons to make them light-sensitive so they could flash flashes of light and flip switches on and off. Well, they had talked about, you know, how that was maybe a little bit of a difficulty having to genetically modify things in the brain. Well, listen to this. A new therapeutic technique to transplant blood-forming, and that would be hematopoietic stem cells directly into the brain, could herald a revolution in our approach to treating central nervous system diseases and neurodegenerative disorders. The technique, which could be used to transplant donor-matched hematopoietic stem cells, HSCs for short, or patients' own genetically engineered HSCs into the brain, was reported in Science Advances Today by researchers from the Dana-Farber Boston Children's Cancer and Blood Disorder Center. And in their study, the team tested the technique in a mouse model to treat lysosomal storage disorders, which is a group of severe metabolic disorders that affects the central nervous system. So, yeah, now we're talking about metabolic disorders again, or, you know, hormonal disorders or whatever. Take your pick. and the central nervous system that directly affects the brain. The team's findings are groundbreaking because until now it was thought that HSCs from a healthy matched donor or patient's own genetically corrected cells, need to be transplanted indirectly through an intravenous line into the bloodstream. But therapeutic successes has then depended on these cells engrafting into a patient's bone marrow, maturing and naturally circulating into the brain, which is very slow and inefficient. But children with lysosomal storage disorders caused by an enzyme imbalance that results in a dangerous buildup of lipids, carbohydrates, and other materials in the body's cells. Time is of the essence to stop the disease's progression. The main issue with conventional HSC transplant strategies has been the length of time needed for the therapy to take effect in the brain. So don't worry about that, because it can take up to a year for the genetically engineered cell lineage to proliferate, spread, and produce therapeutic effects in the brain. And oftentimes, the patients don't have that luxury of time. So they want it to go faster and be more direct. As a way of transplanting HSCs directly into the brain. In a mouse model of lysosomal storage disorders, Biffy's team had transplanted HSCs, which they had genetically engineered to correct the enzyme imbalance, directly into the brain. They found the direct approach jump-started the therapeutic benefits much faster than intravenous infusion alone. They called their method, which infuses the cells into the fluid filled cavities in the brain called the ventricles, intracerebroventricular delivery. And I did not research how you get to brain ventricles, but this sounds pretty horrifying. And once this genetically engineered HSC is transplanted into the brain's ventricles, this crucial enzyme they contain helps to metabolize the materials that were previously building up and causing the tissue damage. A new lineage of cells descended from the transplanted HSCs that would be a type of cell called a myeloid. And I thought that was weird, because aren't myeloid plaques what cause Alzheimer's, they think? This would be a type of cell called a myeloid, which begins to scavenge and consume the excess material that is responsible for neurodegeneration. There is a positive impact from the presence of the new metabologically functional myeloid cells, because they release signaling cytokines that counteract neuroinflammation. Ding, ding, ding. They're going to start using this for all kinds of things, guys, which if unchecked can trigger neuronal damage. So importantly, the transplanted HSCs engrafted into the mouse brains without migrating to other areas of the central nervous system. And this essentially could create a chimera, since they didn't move to other parts of the central nervous system. They just stayed in the brain. They could create a chimera, or a chimera. I like to call it a chimera. A chimera, which is a separate genetic profile within an organism within the brain itself. What? Yes, a friend and I were postulating over this sentence the other day, and we were like, oh, what about, like, we thought spider goats were bad a long time ago, where they were having goats produce spider silk in their milk. Well, this could create, I think one I tossed out there was like a frog bear, by putting some sort of neurons, HSC grafting into the brain of a larger organism and having it grow in a bubble inside of their brains to, who knows, maybe have some effects. I don't know. This is completely nuts. The ability to engineer chimeric populations of brain cells could also open powerful new avenues of craziness to preventing or reversing neurodegenerative diseases like, oh, you guessed it, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, ALS, and more. So now, from the lab to the human brain. Although transplanting HSCs directly into the human brain sounds invasive at first, don't worry about it, because Biffy explains that the procedure would not be overly complex. I envision that this could be done as a one-time treatment accomplished via a catheter temporarily placed into the brain's ventricles under standard anesthesia. It would be in line with currently used clinical procedures that enable access to the brain for treatment. And based on promising results of their mouse studies, Biffy and her colleagues are moving forward with plans to develop a procedure for the clinic. Oh, God. She says that there is great potential for intracerebral ventricular delivery of genetically modified HSCs alone or in combination with intravenous gene therapies. This approach would be a new tool for clinicians to treat a wide range of conditions that affect the brain or the entire nervous system. In addition, Biffy and other authors were quite numerous, and I'm not going to read all of their names. So where does that leave us? And guys, they're going to create chimeras within the brain to cure you, and it's going to be all better there, Johnny. Don't worry about your chemical imbalance that you have from playing too many video games your entire childhood. No, we could fix that. So now, getting back to CRISPRing, this was another one that made me raise an eyebrow, and I also ran across this the other day. Scientists now use CRISPR to turn genes on without editing their DNA. So DNA, shmeena, we don't have to edit that crap anymore. We can just get CRISPR into you. As a little cold, you won't even notice that you're sick there, Johnny, inside of an adenovirus, and we'll let it do its thing. The revolutionary gene editing tool, CRISPR-Cas9, is best known for helping scientists edit a strand of DNA more precisely and efficiently than ever before. This is at an article dated December 7th, 2017, out of the LA Times. So now researchers have demonstrated another use for CRISPR, and that would be changing which genes are expressed without actually altering the genome itself. For the very first time, researchers at the Salk Institute in San Diego, and I just heard on Corbett's show the other day, I think they were interviewing someone, that the Salk Institute, maybe it was on Tim Kelly's show, is actually backed by Rockefeller. They were able to use CRISPR to activate beneficial genes in live mice suffering from muscular dystrophy, type 1 diabetes, or acute kidney injuries. Poor little mousy. And in more than 50% of the test cases, the animal's health improved after the CRISPR intervention, according to a study published Thursday in the journal Cell. Previous work already has demonstrated that CRISPR could be used to alter gene expression in cells in a petri dish, but a new study represents for the very first time that the technique has worked in live animals, the scientists said, and this feat is significant. We move this technique one step forward toward human therapies. Let's all get excited. Alexis Comar, a biochemist at UC San Diego who is not involved with the work, agreed, "This is really through an in vivo study that began to bridge a gap between using CRISPR-based tools in cells in a dish and using them translationally." CRISPR-Cas9 has been described as the Swiss Army knife of gene editing because it performs so many different functions. To start, it works like a search button on your word processor. Scientists can easily program it to find specific strings of letters in your DNA sequence. And once it finds those letters, the complex morphs into a pair of molecular scissors, and then an enzyme, usually the Cas9 enzyme, binds to the chosen region and makes a two-stranded break in the DNA's double helix. To replace a faulty gene with a functional one, scientists also attach a string of DNA to the CRISPR complex so they can ferry it in there. And the hope is that the cell will use the new DNA to repair the cut in its genome. And this works a lot of the time, but not all of the time. And this can lead to accidental deletions, whoops, or insertions into the genetic code. To circumvent this danger, researchers have experimented with using a handicapped version of the CRISPR-Cas9 to deliver instructions that turn a specific gene on or off. Some more flipping switches. And this version of CRISPR, the Cas9 enzyme, is deactivated, so it can still bind to the DNA, but it cannot make its cut. I kind of like this version a little better. And instead, it brings molecules along with it that can tell the cell it is time to activate a particular gene. So aside from removing the possibility that mutations will make its way into the genome, other advantages of this technique are that it is impermanent and adjustable, And I was just wondering if maybe those molecules they were carrying along with it would be something like calcium or sodium that activate or deactivate the ion channels in a cell. It also mimics the process that cells already use to tell their genes to turn on. This is very close to what a cell normally does to activate a gene, so it is not abnormal as to what is happening. Scientists have been trying to use CRISPR to give cells a marching order since at least 2013, but it wasn't until now that anyone was able to make it work in a live animal. So this challenge, scientists said, was working out a delivery system. Researchers often use a virus, ding ding, and that would be the adenovirus, to insert a new material into cells of living animals. However, this transport system has a size limit and only works with relatively small molecules. Yeah, remember CRISPR was a little too big. They had to kind of stuff it in there. And the instructions that the scientists used to activate the genes on the cells in a petri dish were a bit too large to be transported by the virus. So to overcome this hurdle, the researchers separated the Cas9 from the instructions, and they inserted the Cas9 into the cells with one virus and the marching orders with another one. It took about 4 years of trial and error, but eventually they were successful. So the author of the paper recalled the first time he saw the physical results of his experiments, and he was working with mice and weakened muscles to see if he could use the systems to turn on the genes that would promote muscle growth. And the very first time he saw the muscle change, it was very obvious from the outside, he said. I remember I was really excited because no one had ever demonstrated this phenotype in animals before. Belamonte said the whole lab was thrilled. It was a very important moment. So over the next following months, the research team used its system to treat mice with other ailments such as acute kidney injury, type 1 diabetes, and muscular dystrophy. There is still much work to be done before this method can be used in human patients, however. Researchers said the next step is to see how it works in larger animals, and also the safety system will need to be tested repeatedly. Our goal is the treatment of disease, so we want to make sure that this technique is really working. Comore, one of the researchers, says the work is exciting, but she noted that the end result would be a disease treatment rather than a cure. You know, to be completely honest, if they could target individual switches and just flip them on and off without making any real changes, and then maybe monitor it properly so it doesn't get out of control if things went bad, and then flip the clock back, this might not be all that of a bad thing, especially if they could fix a kidney or fix some sort of major degenerative musculature disease. But I still would be careful about whose hands these technologies are in. Remember, $100 million in gene drive technology to pass some sort of CRISPR mutation through a population. Comore said the work is exciting, but it would be a disease treatment rather than a cure. So a patient would likely require repeated treatments, of course, depending on the particular disease. The benefit, though, is that the treatments can be tailored to a specific individual, and that would be precision medicine's goal. They also said their technique can be used on many diseases, including Alzheimer's and perhaps the aging process overall. When you do a medical act, you try to help, not hurt, says Belamonte. If we don't cut the genome, we don't introduce a problem, and that is the main advantage of this technique. So it is pretty obvious that work is pretty far along at being able to not only flip switches, but to be able to influence our gray matter. Well, I ran across this morning on Facebook, and it really kind of surprised me. I didn't expect something like this. Elon Musk, who is very in bed with a lot of these groups that we read about on a daily basis, it appears that he has just launched a company or a, what would you call it, a supplement that supposedly enhances your brain function by 93.7%. How insane is that? And this is a story out of CNN Tech. Elon Musk, and I figured this must have been a paid ad almost because it reads like one. Elon Musk lends a hand to neurobiologists and enhances brain function by 93.7%. This came out today, December 12th, 2017. Real-life Iron Man Elon Musk has just announced that he is about to quit his position in Tesla. Which, did that really happen? I don't know. That's crazy. Why would he quit his position in Tesla? In order to make room for a new business venture, which he believes will change the world more than Tesla, SpaceX, and SolarCity ever could, his new venture is being called Advanced IQ Plus. And although he didn't come up with the idea, he invested $93 million back in the fall of 2015, which allowed him to control all of the Advanced IQ Plus's decisions. We explain how Advanced IQ Plus is enhancing the lives of Americans by providing a long range of mental capabilities. It can provide advanced problem-solving abilities. So this might be like the lead-in to the Neuralink product. Advanced problem-solving abilities, prolonged attention, improved short and long-term memory, and enhanced mood and reduced anxiety. Before we go into details of Advanced IQ Plus, I mean, listen to the way this is written. Let us explain who Elon Musk is exactly. Elon Musk is a visionary, and some call him the smartest entrepreneur of our century. He believes in renewable energy, and although his ideas seem a little too radical and impossible to many people, and he also calls for the end to killer robots, Elon is proving them wrong year after year. He has made it his agenda to make the world a greener and better place, they say. Some of his ventures include electric cars, cheaper and publicly available space travel, and the colonization of Mars to save the human race, as well as next-generation solar panels. But now Musk has decided to partly withdraw from running Tesla in order to focus his new venture in the cognitive enhancement sector. I mean, is this not odd? This is just beyond crazy. So he's going to go pimping stuff like Alex Jones. And that's why he's acquired Advanced IQ Plus. He believes that it will be, that this will be fine-tuned into the Holy Grail and advance the lives of people across the world by giving them the power to take back control of their lives and maybe even, and I'm going to add, in the future, compete with artificial intelligence. What exactly is Advanced IQ Plus? Well, simply stated, it is advanced biohacking. Ding, ding, there's that term again. That's going to get pretty popular here in the not-too-distant future. It is the largest and the fastest-growing sport with the intention of using supplements to transform your brain and have it performing optimally at all times. Elon Musk has laid all the groundwork for us so that we can have access to this product that will change humanity for the better. So step right up, because I read they're giving free samples, no less. This is his new philanthropic mission, giving society the tools we need to advance. Yeah, so don't let him fool you. He gives you a cute smile, and he tells you it's going to be okay, Johnny. Just take this little pill. I wouldn't believe him. Do not fall for any of this mind F that they are pulling on us. Elon believes this will allow everyone to be on the same playing field, and he confirms that Advanced IQ Plus has increased our brain performance. Has increased brain performance by 93.7% without causing any negative side effects. So what exactly does this mean? Will your intellect be 4 or 5 times higher and no one will stand in your way? Well, sounds amazing, doesn't it? Well, this has been a well-kept secret for the elites, the rich, the famous, the CEO executives. And after Elon took control of the company, he was thinking of changing the world as he does with all of his companies. We are now in the age to progress faster than ever before. And in a recent interview, Elon said, yes, caffeine was my go-to during my career because it does help promote mental alertness and can therefore increase my overall productivity. But the effects of caffeine are minuscule on the scale of cognitive enhancement substances. Our team has been able to increase total brain performance by 93.7%, and that is just something that coffee cannot do once you mix them together. So I don't know if I want to get into how this all works. This is pretty long. But then, listen to this, they even invoke Ben Carson. If you remember, Ben Carson was the kind of out there neurosurgeon that ran against Trump for president. He always seemed like he was on lewds or something. So now we also have interviewed Ben Carson, who is a world-renowned neurosurgeon, author, and politician, who is the 17th and current United States Secretary of U.S. housing and urban development under the Trump administration. Ben gives his own opinion on Elon's groundbreaking advancement in neurobiology. Ben Carson has said that his brain is sharper than ever, more clear and focused, so he doesn't go drifting off mentally anymore. And he credits a large part of that to using Advanced IQ Plus. What? This has got to be a paid ad. Ben Carson went on to add, quote, the brain is like a muscle, and you got to work it out and use supplements just like bodybuilders use. But for your brain, that is exactly what I've been doing to enhance my mental capabilities as I get older. Advanced IQ Plus is definitely one for the Histabrooks, unquote. And this is just ludicrous. Ben Carson adds that, quote, once we hit our late 20s, the brain's aging process begins and we begin losing neurons, the cells that make up the brain's nervous system. And by our mid-40s, oh, it's all downhill from there. Our brains have literally begun to shrink. So though these brain changes may sound a bit scary, we could fix them up. And the process is natural and it happens to everyone. So taking these types of supplements will stop the natural aging process of the brain and rebuild the cellular structure to keep your brain performing at its best. We live in a fast progressing world, and you would be a fool to be left behind because your little puny brains can't keep up with all of this amazing opportunity right at your doorsteps. All right, so I'll link to that so you can see that for yourself because it is very ludicrous. So now let's read about brain manipulating psychology. So there was a story that came out in November, and I did not cover this one, but we have covered Sean Parker before. He was the former president of Facebook, and he's also well invested in CRISPR technologies, if I'm not mistaken. This is out of Gizmodo, gizmodo.com. Former Facebook president admits that it is exploiting a vulnerability in human psychology. November 9th, 2017. Sean Parker, the visionary techno elf who co-founded Napster and served as Facebook's first president, seems to have some regrets about building the social behemoth that has taken over our world, telling an audience this week, God only knows what it is doing to our children's brains. Actually, I might have covered this, but that's okay because we can read a little bit of this again to set the stage for the next story. At an Axios event on Wednesday in November, Parker reportedly described himself becoming, quote, something of a conscientious objector to the social media off camera before sharing some interesting nuggets about Facebook and immortality on stage. When Facebook was getting going, I had these people who would come up to me and they would say, I'm not on social media. And I would say, okay, you know, you will be. And they would say, no, I value my real life interactions. I value the moment. I value the presence. I value the intimacy. And I would say, we'll get you eventually. Well, suckers, Justin Timberlake's nerdier alter ego seemingly thought to himself at the time. But more than a decade later, Parker's perspective has changed. I don't know if I really understood the consequences of what I had been saying because of the unintended consequences of a network when it grows to billions or 2 billion people and it literally changes your relationship with society and with each other. It probably interferes with productivity in weird ways. And yeah, I mean, it's a distraction. And God only knows what it is doing to our children's brain. Well, now, he goes on and on and on. Actually, let's talk about one more thing here. They accomplished this by creating a social validation feedback loop, and we read about that feedback loop the other day, based on giving users, quote, a little dopamine hit every once in a while because somebody liked or commented on a photo or a post or whatever, and that dopamine hit is that addiction button that not only is addicting us to social media and to getting responses, but also to our connected devices that someday will cause us to want to step up and get implanted with the machine or become part of the machine. So now there was another story that came out of Gizmodo, and this was yesterday, titled Former Facebook Executive, and this is another former executive. You don't realize it, but you are being programmed. This is the year everyone, including founding executives, began publicly questioning the impact of social media on our lives And I am glad because this is something that nobody's really looked at, how all of these digital interactions are affecting us as a human society. Last month, Facebook's first president, Sean Parker, opened up about his regrets over helping create social media as we know it today. And I don't know if we really understood the consequences of what I was saying, because those unintended consequences of a network, when it grows to that big, literally changes your relationship with society and with each other. Chamath Palihapitiya, former president of Facebook's user growth, also recently expressed his concerns during a recent public discussion at the Stanford Graduate School of Business. Palihapitiya worked at Facebook from 2005 until 2011. He told the audience, quote, "I think we have created tools that are ripping apart the social fabric of how society works," unquote. Some of his comments seem to echo Parker's concern. And Parker has said that the social media creates a social validation feedback loop by giving people a little dopamine. Just days after Parker made those comments, Palihapitiya told the Stanford audience, "That short-term dopamine-driven feedback loop that we've created is now destroying how society works. No civil discourse, no cooperation, misinformation, and mistruth. And it is not an American problem. It is not about Russian ads. This is now a global problem." So don't worry about it, because they can zippity-zap your brain and they can fix it. And as if Parker and Palihapitiya got together in a bar that week to work out their inner demons. And when the host asked Palihapitiya if he was doing any soul searching in regards to his role in building Facebook, he responded, "I feel tremendous guilt. I think we all knew in the back of our minds, even though we feigned this whole line of thinking, like that there probably aren't any bad unintended consequences, I think in the back, deep, deep, deep recesses, we kind of knew something bad could happen. But I think the way we defined it was not quite like this." He went on to explain that this is, "So we are in a really bad state of affairs right now. It is eroding the core foundation of how many people behave by and between each other. And I don't have a good solution. My solution is just don't use these tools anymore. I haven't for years.